You've arrived here at the critical moment.
Hello, I'm Dan Brown.
And I'm Brandi Crawford Urryu. We are your TV BFFs, and this is an interview podcast about the TV shows that people love most. Each episode, we bring on a guest to discuss their top six shows of all time based on what we call the BFF criteria. With so much TV out there, we want to know, what are the best shows you've ever seen? What are your absolute favorite shows? And what are the shows that you would watch on a loop forever?
That's right. Each episode, our guest will pick two shows in each of the three BFF categories, those being their best, favorite, and forever shows. But for this episode, we don't have a guest. Instead, Brandi and I are revealing our own BFF criteria to each other. And before you listen any further, you should know this is actually part two of our criteria episode. So if you haven't listened to part one yet, please stop this episode right now and go and listen to part one first. You'll hear Brandi and I each debate what will go into our best category. Plus, we go deep into a shared favorite show. It's a ton of great stuff. You don't want to miss it. But if you're all caught up, here's part two starting now. So, Brandi, what is your second favorite show?
My second favorite show is so near and dear to my heart. So when I first moved into my East Village apartment, which was my second, well, technically third apartment in New York City, the one I lived in for the longest time, I was there for 8 years. It was on Avenue C and 2nd Street. It was like the place to be. If we worked together in from 2005 to 2013, Dan, you would have come over, you would have been on the roof. Like that's what it was. Like after work, everyone came to my house.
Oh, I love it.
Like that was just, that's just what happened. But we didn't have cable for a long time. Like we moved into the apartment in 2005. We didn't get cable until we were shamed into getting it by my then boyfriend in 2007. So until we got cable, we just could plug our, we had the cable from the wall that we'd plug into my little TV and we just got some random channels. So I got Bravo. So like that's when like my housewife started. But we did have a DVD player and our neighbor, my good friend Tim, for Christmas got me and my roommate this box set seasons 1 through 3 of Arrested Development.
Oh yeah. I had that box set as well.
Yeah. And we just watched it. We watched it over and over and over again. And so Arrested Development is one of my top favorite shows. I think that it is just so hilarious. It's so well written, so well acted. I know a lot of people hate what came out on Netflix. I don't mind it. Like the DVDs are better. Like seasons 1 through 3 are definitely like hands down like the better show.
Yeah.
But like I just wanted to be with them again. So I would,
yeah.
I'm there.
And I think you could say like your favorite show is Arrested Development seasons 1 through 3.
Yeah.
And totally be, you know what I mean? Cause it's not like a forever show where you're stuck with all of it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved that show as well. I still haven't seen the fifth season though.
Like I said, I didn't mind it. It was fine. Like I laughed. Like it was, I don't know. Like I loved everything about the show. But what I really loved about the show is like how many insane guest stars they had who became whatever character they were. Like they weren't, it's like Julia Louis-Dreyfus was on it. I didn't think of her as Elaine. I don't think Veep was on at the time, but like she was the crazy blind pregnant lawyer.
That's right. She was. She absolutely was. Yeah.
You know, it's like they became like Amy Poehler was in it. Like Amy Poehler, she had like married Job.
Oh, that's right. How did I forget that? Yeah. Oh my God.
Like Charlize Theron. Remember?
Yeah.
She was like mentally handicapped.
Yes, that's right.
Like it's just like everyone just fit like so seamlessly into
Charlize Theron in Little England. Right?
Yeah,
Little England. Oh my God, Little England.
No, like Henry Winkler, like the one-armed friend who was like always there to teach. Gene Parmesan. No, Gene Parmesan was the private eye.
Right.
There was also, so the one-armed friend who was like here to teach a lesson and always take his arm off. Like they just blended so well into the Bluth world. And I just like, I hate that Scott Baio is like MAGA because he was hilarious as like blah, blah, blah. Yeah. It's just everything about Judy Greer as Kitty and like the boobs.
Yeah.
Like just everything about, and like, and I'm not even taught, like, I'm not, I haven't even gotten into like the main characters, like Jessica Walter, like RIP. Like,
oh, I know, legend.
Who let you in?
Your new cleaning woman. What happened to Luce?
Supposedly, Luce had to take her daughter to the hospital. That's Lupe, her sister.
Oh God, I hope she's okay.
She's awful. Can barely wash a dish.
Wow.
Don't you judge me. You're the selfish one. You're the one who charged his own brother for a Bluth frozen banana. I mean, it's one banana, Michael. What could it cost? $10?
You've never actually set foot in a supermarket, have you?
I don't have time for this.
Oh my God, she was amazing. Like, I mean, Jeffrey Tambor, I know he's got his issues. Like, sorry. Like, he was still really funny in this. Jason Bateman was so funny in this. Michael Cera, like, maybe. Like, David Cross. Like, everyone. Portia de Rossi. Like, Job. Oh my God. Buster.
I was gonna say.
It's like, basically, they were taking, like, dad jokes and making them incredibly funny.
Yeah, like incredibly sophisticated visual gags, callbacks, references. Like the funniest visual gag of all time, in my opinion, is when David Cross is Tobias Funke, who we haven't mentioned yet, is an analyst and a therapist. And he abbreviates it on his business card to a nail ripist. Which looks very much like anal rapist on a piece of paper. And they never say that, but you read it. And it's like one of the most, it's just like, of course. It just felt like they weren't even trying. Like, it just felt like it was this world and these were these people and they were all just kind of these goofy, funny, you know, in this big self-referential world. It was, oh my gosh. And it's weird though. If I feel like Arrested Development, for as great as it was, and I feel like a lot of like comedy people hold it in very high esteem those first three seasons, but it hasn't really remained in the Office, Friends, Parks and Rec, New Girl, you know, kind of like streaming pantheon of half hour comedies that have remained relevant, Modern Family, and you know, like a lot of those shows. It's kind of, I don't know, maybe it's those later two seasons that have kind of sullied it a little bit, but those first three were so pure, distilled, high dose comedy. Oh my God.
Mother Boy, which is my favorite episode. And it was so funny because like we would always be like, okay, just put it in a DVD. It doesn't matter which one. And somehow that was always what was in. So I have seen Mother Boy so many times. And also the one where they obviously burned down the banana stand.
Right. Iconic. There's always money in the banana stand.
Which I think is like the second episode or something.
Yeah.
But like, I can't not laugh anytime it's on, even though I know what joke is going to come. But it's also because it's so chock full of jokes, there's still jokes to be like, it, like if you look around, it's like, oh my God, I never noticed that. Like look in the room there, like at that thing. Like,
yeah,
there's always kind of something new to discover. It just, Arrested Development is my favorite. It's my favorite comedy show.
I love that. What a great pick. And on second thought, it probably should have been in my almost shows. Like, I think it's because I haven't rewatched it in a long time. Mm-hmm. Maybe it missed out. I'm due for a rewatch there. Mm-hmm. So my second favorite show is not a comedy. It's a drama.
Okay.
This, to me, was one of the first dramas that really... This is the first drama that made me cry. This is the first drama that my dad calls, "We'll put a lump in your throat," you know. He and my mom both watched this show, and I caught on to it that way. The show is The West Wing.
Okay.
I love me some West Wing. I really love me some Aaron Sorkin. Caveats you know, he's not great at writing women characters, you know, very privileged white guy perspective and point of view. But damn it, can he write dialogue? Holy shit. Like, there's I don't think there's ever been a better writer of dialogue in the history of TV. He also went to Syracuse, so, you know, a little bit of a homer there. But yeah, I love all of his stuff. And this, I think The West Wing is the most crystallized Aaron Sorkin experience you can have. It's a vision of a world and a government that I want to have, like, especially now, like it becomes more and more hits you in the feels when you watch it. I couldn't watch it during the Trump presidency. It was too painful to like try and think about it. I've since, you know, gone back and I've seen some episodes since. Unlike a lot of West Wing fans and a lot of, you know, diehard Sorkinites will say that the show really dropped off after he left. Maybe a little bit, but I still really enjoyed it. You know, there was one season that tracked a presidential election that, like, in a lot of ways didn't predict, but they kind of rhymed with and had a lot of overlap with what would end up being the Barack Obama, John McCain race. I'm a politics nerd, so like I love that, you know, you can rewatch it and like learn things. Mm-hmm. And the thing I love most about it and why it's in my favorite is, it's the show that inspires me when I watch it to like it's a show that really values people who are good at their jobs. Like a lot of Aaron Sorkin shows do, but like, I really identify with that. Like I take a lot of pride in my work and I like doing it. And I like the feeling of working hard and accomplishing things. And like that, this show is just riddled with those vibes. Like it's all about doing good work with good people and being proud of it. And I just friggin' love that vibe. It makes me inspired every time I watch it. It makes me want to do better things and be a better person and do better work. And this is so corny and so Aaron Sorkin-y, like feels like it could be like, you know, one of his friggin' overly corny, overly earnest monologues, but I fucking love those speeches. Like they jack me up. I get excited about them, you know? So
it's like, did Aaron Sorkin send you this say about The West Wing, Dan?
No, but I mean, you know, and he's had other shows. The Newsroom was good, not great, but I liked it. Sports Night, excellent. Another show about a show. I still ride for Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, a one season wonder about like a fictional sketch comedy show that kind of mirrored SNL. But of all his shows, this one's the best. I can rewatch it. It hits a lot of personal things for me, which is why it's in my favorite category.
I don't have any connection with The West Wing. Somehow,
wow,
I never watched it and like just never got into it. And I'm what? When did it premiere?
It premiered in like 99. I want to say
that's why. So I I started college in the fall of 1999. So basically anything that really premiered from 1999 through, I would say, about 2008 or 2007, when I finally got cable, I kind of missed the boat on.
That was the entirety of The West Wing run. That makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I feel like The West Wing is the kind of thing that if Netflix had been a thing in when I was in college, I would have probably caught up on The West Wing.
Yeah.
But I think that by the time I started like getting more into shows and stuff, like that one, I just kind of passed by. Even though I feel like there's a lot of DNA in there that I would really enjoy. And I'm interested in checking it out. Like, it's one of those things, though, that, like, there's, like, so much TV I want to check out. It's like, when will I check it out?
Yeah.
But, like, I do feel like that it's one of those shows that's definitely a part of, like, the zeitgeist. People talk about it a lot. Like, it's referenced a lot. And, like, I feel like I need to see a couple of episodes just to, like, kind of get a feel.
And I'll tell you what, and the show holds up, you know? It's, even though it was made in the early 2000s, like, it doesn't matter. Like politics are still politics. A lot of the things are still the same. You're more learning about the process and just kind of generally how government works and not like it's not specific to an era really. Mm-hmm. So that holds up. And it's invented an element of TV that now we just kind of refer to, the walk and talk.
Yeah.
Right. Like the walk and talk, you know, these long tracking shots, you know, with no cuts where, you know, two characters are literally walking and talking. Like it became a hallmark of that show and of Sorkin projects. And, you know, I think it also too, kind of like you were talking about in Arrested Development, the cameos, the one episode cameos, like you'll get people like Phil Dunphy is in there. Ron Swanson is in there. You'll get longer runs like Kristen Chenoweth has a run in there. There's just so many great cameos, so many great performances. Bradley Whitford is Josh Lyman. It's kind of like one of his breakout roles. I mean, the president, Martin Sheen, I mean, Bartlett for America, like that is my president, you know, still to this day. Joe Biden's great. I'd rather have Jed Bartlett. Sorry. Any day of the week. Give me Jed Bartlett. He's my guy. I think you like it a lot, Brandy. And I'll tell you what you should do. If you do want to go back into it, West Wing cheat code is start with season two.
Okay.
Season one is good. You don't really need it. It ends with a big cliffhanger, but like, you know, if you watch the last maybe two episodes of season one or something, if you really wanted to, but they also like, it was a network show. There's a very extended previously on. So like you catch up pretty quick.
Okay.
And seasons 2, 3, and 4 are the best of the West Wing. Like that is, it's kind of like money stretch, I would say. Mm-hmm. And yes, they're network seasons. They're longer. They're, you know, a 22 episode deal. But if you're just doing those three seasons, those are three Sorkin seasons, like that, I think would give you a really good idea about the show and be really enjoyable without having to commit to 7 network seasons.
Okay.
Come in for 3. You'll love it. If you want to stick with it, great, but you don't have to. You can kind of leave off when Sorkin did and you're good to go.
Okay. I'm into that.
There's never been a better show about politics.
All right. West Wing. I love
West Wing, baby. It's kind of funny. Like my West Wing is almost like your X-Files. Like the one show that's like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't think we'd be talking about this, but I like it. You know,
it's like I do see West Wing for you.
Yeah.
In a way that I don't know if you saw X-Files for me, but it's also because like you didn't know me growing up.
Right.
Like, if you know me growing up, you'd be like, oh, yeah, she fucking loves X-Files. Of course, I get it.
Yeah. All right. So your favorite shows are The Challenge and Arrested Development. Mm-hmm. Mine are, of course, The Challenge and The West Wing. Mm-hmm. Two shows that could not be more diametrically opposed.
I know. In both cases. Well, I don't know. Arrested Development probably has more in common with The Challenge than The West Wing.
Yeah, I think so. Some of those characters... Oh my God, here's a question. Who on Arrested Development would go on The Challenge?
Job.
Yeah, he would. And he'd get voted out. He'd be out first episode.
Probably Buster. And then Michael would go in being like, oh God, okay, fine, I'll do it.
Yeah, yeah. No one on the West Wing would go on The Challenge. Absolutely not.
No.
Not a chance. All right, Brandy. So we've moved on to our forever categories.
All right, so... Forever shows. We have to watch beginning to end on a loop forever.
Yes. And a couple specifics here to these rules. Pilot to finale. However, it can be a currently running show. So, you know, if it were something like a, you know, one of the shows we talked about in our OMA shows, like an SNL, where it's still premiering new episodes, you'd be able to catch up on those after, you know, you go through a forever show run. But yeah. First to last in order. You can't skip seasons. You can't skip episodes. You can jump back and forth between your two forever shows. You don't need to do one and then the other. So that's kind of nice. Mm-hmm. You change things up, but those are the parameters. So Brandy, what is your first forever show?
So my first forever show is a show that has been on, I think, since the late 90s. I think there's probably over 2000 episodes, maybe more. There might be like 3000 episodes. It's amazing. You can catch it on TV at pretty much any time of day on HGTV. It is a little show called House Hunters.
Oh, wow. Now, okay.
I know that. So Dan and I did make the caveat at the beginning that we wouldn't be picking shows in our criteria that we had worked on. And technically, we both used to work at the production company that produced House Hunters International.
International.
Which is different than House Hunters.
That is a distinction. They are two different shows made by two different production companies.
Yes. So I have, and I never worked on House Hunters International either, but...
Also true. If you had chosen International, I think we probably would have allowed it because we were technically not working for that show. We were developing shows... for the company that produced that show, which is different.
Yeah, that was a show that like paid us, but...
Yeah, pretty much. We were basically paid by House Hunters International. We did not work for that show.
Yes. And there is a special place in my heart for House Hunters International.
Of course.
But House Hunters was first. House Hunters is... When you think The Challenge is the perfect reality show, I think that House Hunters is the perfect reality show.
Okay, tell me why. I love it.
You get, first of all, it's such a simple format. For those of you who don't know, in House Hunters, you go to any city across the country and people look at three houses. At the end of the episode, they pick one. The end.
The end.
That's what it is. And, you know, like top of the show is like, let's meet the family. Let's meet the people that are buying the house. Oh, great. All right. Let's talk to the real estate agent. This is what I'm looking for. They always have two totally different things. I want big closets. I hate split levels. I love split levels and I don't want storage.
Right.
And then they look at the houses. None of the houses usually have anything that either of them ever asked for. And then they pick one. And it is so easy to watch. I can't start an episode and not finish it because I need to know what they pick.
Right.
And guess what? Right after they pick it, episode's over and the next one is starting. So that's how you find yourself just watching House Hunters on a loop for hours.
And in your case, forever.
Forever. And so I was like, this is the perfect forever show because they're never going to stop making this.
No, I think you could probably... like in the afterlife, if we're talking forever, you'd maybe get through three or four full runs of House Hunters. There's so many.
There's so many. Like, I feel like I wouldn't even, I don't know if I would get to the end to start right. back over again.
Right. They just keep adding.
Anyway, I love House Hunters. Number one, I've always loved looking in houses. If I could just go to an open house like every week, I would. Okay.
Sure.
My favorite thing about the pandemic is that on Street Easy now, everywhere has a video tour.
Yes, that's right.
So now I only sort, I'm not even looking for an apartment. In case anybody's wondering, not looking for an apartment, but I am on Street Easy every day, just looking around.
You know what though? It is fun though. I mean, I moved recently. I moved during the pandemic and the visual tours are great. Yeah. And it's funny, like I'm someone who like I enjoy the prospect of like new space and, you know, finding a new place to live and looking for rental places and Airbnbs. Like I love it. So like totally understand why this show has become so successful. And so, I mean, it is the like HGTV should really just be called the House Hunters Network. Like it is the reason it's still around.
Yeah.
Here's something you don't know about me, Brandy. And I hope we can continue to be podcast partners and co-hosts. I have never sought out or chosen to watch an episode of House Hunters in my life.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Wow.
I know. Are we going to be okay?
It's fine. I just can't believe that, like, honestly, like, if House Hunters is on, like, I'm putting it on. Like, right now, it's 10:41, okay? I know that House Hunters is on HGTV right now. Like, it's on at, like,
right.
10 and 10:30. International is on at 11 and 11:30.
See, the thing with me is my dad was very handy around the house and, you know, did a lot of stuff and home improvement stuff. I was, of my three brothers, probably the one who took to it the least. I enjoyed like working with him and have great fond memories, you know, helping to build the deck and paint the house and stuff like that. But I never went to that sort of thing for entertainment. If I was going to do a lifestyle show, it's probably going to be in the food genre, food and cooking. It wasn't really going to be... And if it was going to be houses, it would probably be more renovation stuff because that was closer to what I knew and what I'd experienced. We didn't move when I was a kid. I didn't know what moving was like or looking for a house was like until, you know, I was an adult. Mm-hmm. So that never really stuck with me. And then, yeah, I just never really got into it. I watched episodes like while we were at Leopard, but yeah, I never watched House Hunters for pleasure.
Oh man, like I love, and but you know what? Also growing up, it's not that I moved a lot growing up, but my mom also loved looking at houses.
Oh,
so
cool.
Like we would always, it's like if we were driving around and she saw a new subdivision going up, she's like, oh, let's go take a look.
Oh, cool.
And like if there was an open house, like we would go in and like look around. And so, yeah. And like, I remember, so in college, we didn't have HGTV on our college cable. And so I would love when I would come home, I'd be like, oh, I can watch House Hunters. House Hunters is going to be on. And that was like very exciting to me. And then when I went in for my interview at Leopard, I was like, well, I knew who the company was when you called me to the guy that was interviewing me. I was like, because I love House Hunters International. And he was like, what? I was like, yeah, you guys do House Hunters International. I see the tag after the show. I'm like, every time I watch it. So I knew what the company was. No big deal.
I have a question for you. So as an uninitiated, right? I know you can't work in reality and not know House Hunters. You can't be a person alive with a cable subscription and not know House Hunters. But what are the types of episodes you like best? Is it cities? Is it suburbs? Is it out in the country? Is it something about the couple's dynamic, the type of family? Like, what are your favorite types of House Hunters episodes?
I love any that are in New York, just because I love looking in New York apartments, because you honestly never know where you're going to get with a New York apartment. And I know that obviously just from living here.
Right.
I also love just like places that I've never heard of, like, you know, Boise, Idaho. It's like, oh, so that's what houses look like here. Okay, cool. Like, I'm always interested in just kind of like these places I've never heard of. It's like, obviously, like, yeah, I'll watch something in LA. I'll watch something in Florida. Like, you know, I'll watch these places that are maybe a little bit more well known. But like, I also like, I kind of want to see like, oh, you're looking for something in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Right.
Okay.
What would that be like?
What's going on there? And it's like, oh, right. Okay. Oh, so the houses look the same everywhere. Okay, great. But, and I don't really care who the family is that's moving. That never, like, I just want to see the houses. It's like, so like the,
right.
That part of the story, it's like, I understand like from a producing standpoint, like you want people with interesting stories,
right?
You know, but like, that's not why I'm watching. I just want to see the houses. Like, no.
You're there for the properties.
Houses. I'm here to see the properties.
And so like, here's another question for you. What sort of house do you gravitate towards? Are you a ranch? Are you a split level? I don't even know what these are, but a Tudor, is that a thing? Like, what sort of houses do you like?
I love it when they go look in big houses.
Yeah, the bigger,
like,
the better.
I love that. The bigger, yeah. The better. I mean, I don't need like House Hunters mansions. Like, there is a strand where they do that. Like, I think they had like $1 million thing that, yeah, they were doing for a while.
House Hunters will fuck around with the theme and do like,
yeah,
runs of things, mm-hmm, for sure.
I really hate like the cookie cutter type houses. You know, I love it, mm-hmm, when you see like the more like unique looking properties.
Right.
I don't really just need to see like the split level siding that is obviously like in a subdivision where every other house looks like it.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean?
Cookie cutter, like, you know, kind of like, you know, here's the basic plan, a little bit of tweak here and there, but not really. And we're going to make 50 of them, put them all on this, you know, mm-hmm, quarter mile square.
Yeah. No, I really love it. It's like, you know, like the places that are like, oh, like I'm looking for a place with like a little bit of land, and like the houses like can sometimes like look a little different. I love it. Like when I see like, oh shit, there's a pool. Get it. Walkout basement. Love it.
Nice.
But yeah. So House Hunters, my forever, forever show. Like a literal forever show.
Fun pick. Very on brand for you. I love it. And yeah, I literally don't think you could find a show with more episodes.
Yeah.
I don't think you could.
I don't think
so you could. So for that either. Reason,
you know,
incredible
what?
Pick.
A soap opera, maybe.
Yeah, that's a good point.
A soap
Soaps,
opera.
SNL is probably up there. Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of SNL, my first forever show features one of the most iconic SNL castmates, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I think would be a wonderful destination for House Hunters. I think it would be very interesting to see what houses look like in the great little town of Pawnee, Indiana. My first forever show is Parks and Recreation.
I love this for you.
Starring the incredible Amy Poehler as Leslie Knope,
mm-hmm,
one of the greatest sitcom characters of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I just love the show. I think it's the perfect comedy. It's, you know, similar to The West Wing. It's about, you know, good people working together to do good things. You know, I think it was, mm-hmm, you know, Mike Schur talks about developing the show as like, what if we could do a funny West Wing? I think that's kind of how it was sparked. And yeah, it's just probably the best comedy cast I think ever assembled. You have Amy Poehler, you have Nick Offerman, you have Aubrey Plaza, you have Chris Pratt, pre-superhero, you have Retta, you have Aziz Ansari, you have, I'm sure I'm forgetting a whole bunch.
Well, I mean, and then like later on you get Rob Lowe
and Adam Scott,
Rashida Jones,
great cameos, Rashida Jones, the best cameos, Jean Ralphio, and his sister played by one of my favorite people of all time, Jenny Slate. Like, it just, every time I watch it, it just fills my heart with joy and warmth. That's a vibe that I would be very happy to experience over and over again. It is a network show, 7 seasons. I think the last couple seasons weren't as many, but we're still talking probably at least 100 episodes.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty good. I've never gotten bored of it. It is the show that if it's on the grid, it's going on. I don't care if I was planning to watch something else. I'm going to check in. I'm going to see what episode it is. And if it's a good run, I'm going to stick around for a couple, no matter what. But it's a vibe that I love. I think the writing is genius. I think Mike Schur creates the best comedies out there, and this is his best one. If you haven't seen it, stick with it through the first couple episodes. The creator, Mike Schur, has said, any comedy, no matter what it is, give it 6 episodes. It needs time to kind of find its footing. I think this one especially, because it came out of the success of The Office. Mike Schur wrote and produced on The Office and then was given the task of creating a spinoff. That was the original plan, didn't pan out. So they pivoted to this Parks and Rec idea. And the first season, the Leslie Knope character has a lot more Michael Scott to her than she eventually, evolves into. So that first season is a little rocky, I think, for that reason. But once they kind of realized who Leslie is and then how the world interacts around her, it really, really kicks off. And then towards the end of season two, you get Rob Lowe and Adam Scott in there. And then from there, it doesn't let up. And I'll say, I didn't go back and rewatch it before this conversation, but when I moved to my new apartment where I am now, it was not under the best of circumstances. I was coming out of a pretty rough breakup at the time. And when I moved in and I was settled, I turned on the TV and I didn't even pull up a streaming service. I got my YouTube TV set up and I just kind of flipping around to see what was on, like thinking about other things really. And Parks and Rec was on, and it was the 7th season. It was the last like 8 episodes. And I just watched. I just watched the rest of the season, the finale to the series. And I cried and I loved it. And like, again, I think along with Broad City, one of the best comedy finales of all time. They had a really inventive kind of flash forward device in the finale where you got to see the characters where they are now, but then where they were going to be 7 years in the future and then even beyond. And it was just super, super well done, very emotional and kind of just perfectly full circle brought that whole series together in a way that made me want to watch it over again, after watching that finale. And and I would be comfortable watching it over and over again forever. I just fucking love that show.
It's funny that you said that you didn't feel like it, or like that, people have said that it didn't really catch its footing in season one. Cause like, I really liked it from the jump. Cause I just thought that it was so like, it felt very different than anything I'd seen before. These were characters that I didn't really have a context for. And I really enjoyed it. I feel like I fell off a little bit from it after season 3, not because I didn't think it was still good. It was just like, I don't know if DVR was in my life at that point or not.
Right.
But I just hadn't been watching it. But it's one of those things that like, whenever it's on, I'll watch an episode. I love all the characters on it. I always laugh. I love the COVID special that they did.
And I'll tell you what, this show, if you ever need a quick pick me up, some of the best blooper reels you'll ever see
really
come from Parks and Rec. Oh man. Yeah. Like YouTube Parks and Rec bloopers, each season has one and they are next level stuff.
Okay.
So good.
But yeah, no, I like everyone who's in it. Like, do you have like a favorite or like a favorite run?
I think the most memorable run is probably when Leslie runs for office the first time.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really, really good run. I think that's when it was really like in the zone and we're just cooking on all cylinders. It shifted the focus of the show to this kind of new exciting adventure. It felt more West Wingy, more campaign driven, more politicky, which I really freaking loved.
Although I've not worked with you professionally, as a private citizen, I have personally patronized each and every one of your establishments.
I've never seen you buy a salad at Sue's Salad.
It's because I don't hate myself, Tanya. I'm sorry. I know I should be chasing your vote, but I stand behind my decision to avoid salad and other disgusting things. And I think I have a lot of support in the community for that.
I love that run. But I have a soft spot for the later seasons too. I think unlike a lot of comedies, it progressed and the characters developed in a way that it didn't feel like it fell off at all. And it kept kind of growing and changing in its own way, yet still feeling very much like the show it always was. So I would probably say like, yeah, that was probably, I think season three maybe was the election run. And then later seasons, after we experienced the time jump, after I think season five or six, the last season or two kind of jumps 3 years in the future, Leslie gets a new job and then we jump in the future. And I think all that stuff is really well done as well.
Who's your favorite character?
Oh gosh, Andy Dwyer. I think I can't not laugh at him.
I love his art. I love that he kind of went from he was a doofus the whole time, but like
he was
going from being the doofus with Rashida Jones to being the doofus with Aubrey Plaza was really genius.
Yeah. But as soon as I say that, I second guess it. And this is the thing with the show. I'm not sure that I have a favorite character because I say Andy Dwyer and my brain goes to, well, what about Ron Swanson? And then I say Ron Swanson, and I go, but you can't leave out Leslie. She's the heart of the show.
Yeah.
And I think about Leslie, I'm like, but I don't know. Probably between those three, I would say, between Leslie, Ron, and Andy. Mm-hmm. One of those three depends on the day, though, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. It just depends on the day.
I mean, I have a special place in my heart for Rob Lowe on this show. I didn't think of him as a comedic actor until he's perfect in this and makes me laugh so much. And like now I feel like he should only do comedy. I can't see him do anything serious.
You know what? He's really, you're going to enjoy when you watch The West Wing. He's in that show and is very good as a serious character named Sam.
Okay. So Parks and Rec forever.
Forever show. Brandy, what's your second?
My second favorite show, when I picked this, I was like, this is a bold, bold choice because there are only three seasons and 28 episodes of this show.
Whoa, this is high risk, high reward. I don't know. Oh boy. Okay.
High risk, high reward. But it's a show where every single episode is a banger.
Okay.
And that is Chappelle's Show.
Wow. Chappelle's Show.
I love Chappelle's Show. Like, I love it.
Dynamite pick.
I mean, it holds a special place in my heart for a few reasons. One, I've always loved Dave Chappelle. Two, I was a PA on the show a couple times because I was a PA on Last Comic Standing and I met Donnell Rollins, who you may know as Ashy Larry. And he hooked me up with being a PA on Dave Chappelle. But at the time, I didn't know how to, like, network.
Right.
So like I was a PA like twice and then I got free tickets to the show. So things that happened. I saw the Rick James episode. I was in the audience.
Get out of
here. When that episode premiered. And Dave Chappelle, he was talking to the audience about it. He was like, guys, he was like, this is going to be we've never done something like this before. This is going to be kind of crazy. I just want you guys to go with me. He's like, but it's real. And we had to do it.
I'm behind the bar and I'm serving drinks. And Charlie bends over. I call. I said, Charlie, come here.
Charlie, there's a new joke going around. Have you heard it? What did the five fingers say to the face?
What?
Slap.
Wow, you're in the audience for that episode.
In the audience for it.
Wow.
Yes, I love this show. I love it. And I would love to watch it over and over and over again. And one thing that we do, and another reason why this came up for me is that on some of our episodes, we ask our guests for their forever shows. If you could watch a show, if you could think about your forever shows as if you could watch them like you're watching them for the first time.
Right. So it's almost kind of like, you know, you finish watching and Men in Black Memory Eraser, you forget that experience of watching that show, you get to watch it like it's new.
I would love to watch the Chappelle Show like it's new every time because I laugh even though I've seen it a million times. But like, I just remember, like, do you remember how hard you laugh when you first saw the Prince episode? Do you know what I mean? The shirts versus the blouses.
I still, like, we still, like, my friend group to this day, we'll still say, like, when a game is over, when a team wins, we say blouses. Like, that's how we determine that an athletic competition is over, like whether the clock has run zero or not. Like, there's no way they're coming back. This game is blouses. We say it all the time.
But like, I love all of, I mean, I love, what's this, Tyrone Biggums. I love Nigradames. I love Ashy Larry. I love one of my favorite episodes is, like, if reparations happen.
Right.
Like, what Black people are going to do. I just love how I understand why he stopped doing the show. But what I love so much about the show is that, like, he just really took the Black experience and, like, just, you just had to laugh. You know what I mean? Like, he took all of these tropes and, like, just made them into really good, smart comedy. And I feel like, you know, I feel like Key and Peele took a big page out of his book with their show. And I love their show so much, too. And I also know, like, I feel like they went out early, too. And, like, I get it. I get when you are trying to do that kind of, I don't even want to call it like racial comedy, but like as a Black creator, making this kind of comedy that's really getting to the heart of a lot of like Black life and making it so like, and it's obviously funny. So like everybody's laughing at it, but like I can see how it can be tough when everyone's laughing at it though.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? But and which is why Dave Chappelle like left, you know, because he was like, I want to make this is people aren't understanding what I'm trying to do here. Like the wrong kind of people are thinking this is funny for the wrong reason.
Right.
But like it's just a magical show. And like I said, every single episode, I love every single episode.
Yeah. And also too, like, think of like one sketch that you haven't mentioned, which is the one I think about all the time when I think about this show, is Clayton Bigsby.
Oh my God, the black white supremacist.
The Black white supremacist. Which I don't know if you remember this, you probably do. You're a huge fan of the show. That was the first sketch of the first episode. Like, how fucking ballsy do you have to be to come out with the Black white supremacist sketch right out of the gate? Like, that is the first thing, and it blew me away. And like, and I'm someone like, you know, white kid, white family with white friends, like whitewashed experience. This was the first, you know, quote unquote Black show that I really like loved and sought out, was exposed to, however you want to put it. Like, this was kind of like, in a lot of ways, my first real experience with Black culture outside of like the rap music my friends were listening to, you know what I mean?
And I think it was for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I loved, and that's part of what I loved about it too, that like he had such a huge platform to get this out and he did it.
Yeah.
You know, like I love the like keeping it real goes wrong.
Yes.
Like I love when they did the racial draft.
I was just going to say the racial drafts. Oh my God. The whole Tiger Woods of it all was just
like, it just,
but by the way, like that, I didn't know that Tiger Woods had Asian heritage, like even just little things like that, that yeah, sometimes it takes a comedy show to like expand your understanding of other people and their experience, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a favorite? Do you have one sketch that rises above them all? This is like choosing your favorite child. I know, but like, do you have one?
It's the Charlie Murphy True Hollywood Story. It's Rick James, bitch. Like, it's the darkness. Calling Charlie Murphy the darkness. Like, oh my God. Like,
and also, too, about the show, like, we forget that there was a musical component in which a lot of huge acts performed before they were huge acts. Like, Kanye was on that show. Am I wrong?
No, you're right. He was. Kanye was on it. I remember like Common was on it. Wait, who? Talib Kweli, I know. Ludacris was on it.
Yeah.
A Big Boy, like not, I don't think Outkast was on it, but I think Big Boy was on it.
Right.
Busta, it was great. Other favorite sketch. This is like right up there with the Charlie Murphy True Hollywood Story. The sketch where John Mayer is in it. And he is playing the guitar. It's basically he's like being like a white people whisperer.
Right.
And so it's like, how all the different races will start to dance. That is one of my favorites. Sorry, I just saw that John Mayer was a musical guest. And I was like, oh my God, that episode was hilarious when he was in it.
But I think that's just a testament to the high level that the show was working at. Like, it's hard to choose a favorite.
Yeah.
It's by like minutia, small degrees of one over the other.
Yeah.
It's kind of like like I was talking about like favorite character in Parks and Rec. It's like your favorite sketch might depend on the day.
Mm-hmm.
Oh gosh. Yeah. I love it. Oh man. So that's your list.
That's my list.
So that's your six.
Mm-hmm.
We have one more. We have My Last Forever Show. And this is when I first thought of the criteria and I first thought of this idea, it was with this show in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of the whole crux of this podcast kind of came out of how I talked about this show, because people would ask me, what's your favorite show? And it's like, well, it depends on how you slice it, because there's a show that's my favorite, but I don't think that's the best show ever made. So if you're asking what I think is the best, blah, blah, blah. And that kind of opened this whole can of worms. But it always started with me saying, my favorite show is and always will be Friday Night Lights.
I was wondering where it's going to appear on your list.
Now, it's my favorite show, and yet it's not in the favorite category. Mm-hmm. It was in the favorite category for a long time until recently. I was with a friend who had never seen it. And I'm like, well, you're going to have to watch the pilot. I think the greatest pilot ever made.
Mm-hmm.
There is no first episode of any show that has so thoroughly hooked me. Just instantly, these characters so quickly. And rewatching it, I realized, you know what? Yeah, this is the world that I would want to be in forever. It is the show that, I've talked about, The Challenge is kind of the show that like made me think about how shows work. This is the show that made me think about how TV makes people feel.
Mm.
And it made me want to make things that make people feel things.
When Jason Street went down the first game of the season, everybody wrote us off. Every man at some point in his life is going to lose a battle. He's going to fight and he's going to lose. But what makes him a man is that in the midst of that battle, he does not lose himself. This game is not over. This battle is not over. So let's hear it one more time. Together. Clear eyes, full hearts.
Can't lose!
Let's go!
Can't lose!
The way this show makes me feel, it's hard for me to explain. I love it so much. I have Clear Eyes, Full Hearts tattooed on my arm right there. I also, I don't know if you noticed a quick little costume change here. I threw on my shirt, Dylan Panthers, let's go. Yeah, it's this show is, when we set up the criteria, it kind of checks all my boxes, right? Like, I think some of the episodes are some of the best episodes of TV I've seen. I'm looking at you, Mud Bowl in season one, the pilot, which I mentioned, the series finale is just a masterclass in how to land a show like this. It makes me feel good. I think Dylan is a real place. it feels so real. It feels so fully lived in. I mean, the characters are just some of the most iconic of all time. Tim Riggins, Coach Taylor, Tammy.
Tammy Taylor.
Gosh, I haven't even mentioned Buddy Garrity. I haven't even mentioned Billy Riggins and Lila and Tyra and like just such a cast of characters that just felt so lived in. It's like I could go there tomorrow and I just want to hang out with these people. I just want to be their friends. Mm-hmm. And like go to a barbecue at Coach's and go to Herman Fields and watch games on Friday nights under the lights.
Honestly, I mean, he's always going to be, Kyle Chandler is forever Coach Taylor to me.
Always. Yeah.
Like
always.
And I love what you said about, because it's so true. Like all the characters feel so comfortable and lived in. It's like, these are people,
Mm-hmm.
Like I went to high school with a Lila Garrity, 100%.
Yeah.
I went to high school with the Mass Aronson.
Yeah.
I wish I went to high school with the Tim Riggins. I didn't. I wish you would know if I did.
And also too, like it's a really interesting, like just from the production of it all and like the story of how this show came to be and then how it continued on. Like, it was a book first. And then that book was adapted into a movie. Tammy, Connie Britton, played the coach's wife in that movie, actually.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And then Peter Berg was like, this idea still has legs. I'm going to turn it into a show. Thank goodness. Went back to Connie Britton, was like, I think for the show, it's really going to be at the heart of it, the story of this, you know, this coach and this marriage and Tammy, and keep calling her Tammy, Jesus.
She'll always be Tammy.
And Connie's like, I'll be in it, but didn't want to take the role if it was going to be just the coach's wife. Like, she wanted to be a really fleshed out character, and I think pushed a lot for what that character ended up being, which I love. And then it had a great first season, full 22 episode first season. Season two comes around and things are feeling a little different. And this is what makes it maybe a questionable forever show, but I'm going to stand behind it. Even though I can't skip seasons and skip episodes, season two is widely regarded to not be very good.
Why?
So what happened was, it feels like it was a case of network notes gone awry. It needed to be a little bit more melodramatic. So like, there's a character that literally kills a guy and gets away with it. Kind of wild plot swings. It felt like characters were taking shifts that didn't feel like them after this great first season. I think to the show's benefit, the writer's strike hit, and it kind of just abruptly stopped after 14 episodes. Like, it's not a finale, it just ends. And then after that, the future of the show was kind of uncertain coming out of the writer's strike. So what happened was this really inventive production deal where NBC partnered with DirecTV and kind of split the funding so that seasons, they went from 22 episodes to a 13 episode season in season three, and DirecTV would air them first exclusively in the fall, and then NBC would get them in the spring and have its own kind of window. So like, this really interesting kind of co-producing deal that I had never really seen before saved the show, but it was never certain that it would go on. So like, every season from like three on kind of ends like it could be a series finale. So it gives extra weight to all of these seasons. And then after season three, it's a show about high school and the football team and the people associated and around it and the community that's around it. A lot of these kids graduate, right? And unlike, you know, forcing the issue like a lot of other shows might do, it recast a large majority of its characters and brought in a whole new team. We're introduced to Vince Howard, a young Michael B. Jordan, in one of his first breakout roles. Like, Journey Smollett joins the show. Like, there's, and they reboot it in a way so brilliantly that by the end of it, you know, it starts with Coach on the Dillon Panthers. By the end of it, you're an East Dillon Lions fan. You're like, fuck the Panthers. Like, you, it's a full 180, and it's so brilliantly done and just so well acted. And also too, like, you know, Brandy Wee, you know, grew up on reality and work in reality. It's shot like a reality show. Like, actors don't have marks. Cameras, there's like no blocking really. They just kind of like, it's very fly on the wall.
It's very handheld and gritty.
Handheld and gritty. It's kind of like, just be in the world and live in this world, and we'll capture it. So for all of those reasons, I would watch this show forever until the end of time.
I mean, I love it. So my, I do think that Friday Night Lights is a great show. I didn't watch it like so like pilot to finale like you did. I think I came in, I definitely came in the first season, watched it. I don't think that I really saw season two.
You're better for it. It's fine.
So I think I probably watched like most of the first season and then like most of the last two seasons.
Yeah.
Because I definitely remember Michael B. Jordan. But I also like have like very fond memories of like, I feel like now I'm always going to know him as that asshole Todd. But
Landry Clark.
But when I saw him first on Breaking Bad, I was like, oh my gosh, Landry.
Yeah, Landry. Or as Coach calls him, Lance. Where's that Lance kid?
Yeah.
And also too, this show, like for a network show in the early to mid 2000s, like really grappled with some topics. Like there was really in, like talking about race in a way that like made you think, you know, talking about marriages and the relationship between Coach and Tammy isn't just perfect always. There's some back and forth. There's some thorniness. Like the fifth season towards the end is really like a make or break. Like, oh my gosh, are they going to get through this? Like there's a lot of like real kind of heavy issue storytelling.
I think it's a great forever show, especially if you can watch it like you've never seen it before every time you start over.
And that would be the one. I think that's
yeah.
Parks and Rec, I still laugh, and you know, I don't need to see that like it's new every time to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I would love to watch Friday Night Lights every time like it's the first time, mm-hmm. because it's a gamut of emotions. Like, yeah, I'd get mad at season two in spots, be like, what is this shit? But then the feeling of it rebounding in season three and then reinventing itself in season four, and then going out on such a high in season five, it's like, oh my God, what a journey. And then they have that journey over and over again. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. I can think of nothing better.
This was definitely a show that, like, I for sure cried at, like, many, many times.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like, it really tugged on the old heartstrings.
Yeah.
Because was this the same people that did Friday Night Lights? They also do Parenthood?
They did Parenthood next. Okay. Yeah. Which, honestly, now that you're mentioning it, probably should have been in my Almost shows. I love Parenthood. And it has similar vibes, has a similar, like, expansive, great cast, lived-in world, character mm-hmm. arcs, fly on the wall, like, all those hallmarks.
The movie Parenthood was, like, one of my and is still, like, one of my favorite rewatchables with Steve Martin.
Oh, yeah.
Which I don't think it has anything to do with the series, but, like, I love that movie so much. It's so good. Wow. So, Friday Night Lights and Parks and Rec.
Yeah. So let's do a full recap. So yeah. I'll read yours and you read mine. How about that?
Okay.
So the best shows that Brandy has ever seen are Broad City and the terrifying X-Files. Her favorite shows are The Challenge, obviously, and Arrested Development. And the shows she would watch on a loop forever are House Hunters and Chappelle's Show. Genius picks throughout, I think.
Thank you. All right. So, Dan, your best shows are Breaking Bad and Top Chef. Your favorite shows are, we of course share in common, The Challenge, but you also have The West Wing. And your forever shows that you're watching over and over on a loop forever and eternity are Parks and Rec and Friday Night Lights.
I love it.
I love this list for you.
So something that we'll do with all our guests is kind of like talk about what stands out on the, mm-hmm. these criteria. What stands out for you just kind of about whether it's my list or yeah, what stands out for you from these shows?
From your list, what stands out for me is Friday Night Lights. I knew that you loved it, but I never really understood where you were coming from with it. Like, that sounds like I'm, like, not being nice.
it sounds like you don't like the show. Like, yeah, I understand. Like,
but yeah, I understand where you're coming from. But no. With Friday, like, but I just, you know, because I knew that you really, really loved it. But, like, it was really interesting for me to kind of find out, like, where that kind of came from and, like, really what it means to you. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like, you got this tattooed on your arm. Like, this means something to you.
Yeah.
And so, like, that was really, I feel like it definitely, it totally makes sense why it's in your forever category. And just kind of hearing you explain out, like, this is a world that you loved and that you really connected with. These are characters that you really connected with. And, like, that's really awesome to, like, have a show that gives you that.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's very, you don't find that often. I feel like you find shows that you really like and you like to watch and that are, you know, like, whatever, but, like, it's not often that you really find shows that it's like, this is a world that I absolutely love.
Yeah. And I think that's something that I think really cemented that in my forever category. In Parks and Rec too, they're both shows that mm-hmm. really are about, like, humanity and mm-hmm. it's complicated, but, like, really kind of focus and champion the good parts of it. So, like, if this is the afterlife, that I think that's a nice thing to be reminded of mm-hmm. forever with my forever show. So, like, I really took that into account too. Like, how do they make me feel? What do they say about, you know, humans and how we treat each other? And is that something that I want to hang out with and hold with me and be with forever? And mm-hmm. I think it is. And yeah. Brandy, your list, I'm very impressed with. I love so much about it. Obviously, The Challenge, I'm so happy we got to talk about that. House Hunters is a forever show. Paired with Chappelle's Show is just such a dynamite. It's, like, not surprising because I know you and, like, these make sense for you. Absolutely. But, like, also just to feel, like, just wonderfully strategic. Like, for every one episode of Chappelle's Show, you can watch 100 House Hunters.
It's true.
So, like, they kind of, like, yeah, one doesn't have a ton, but one has so many, it kind of just cancels each other out in that way, which I think was really smart. Mm-hmm. But I think my favorite pick of yours was your very first one. I think Broad City in your best category. Mm-hmm. I kind of wasn't expecting it, and I feel bad about that because it is such a good, like just such a well done show that it should be talked about in the best of comedy category more often. So I'm glad mm-hmm. you put it there. And I thought that was one of my favorites on your list.
Thanks. Yeah, no, I love it. I might want to like go watch an episode. I feel like that's another one where I can like watch any episode and I'm just like cracking up.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like after this conversation, what's the show on your list that you most want to watch right now? Is it Broad City after talking about all of them?
I think it's a mix between Broad City and Chappelle Show. But the good thing about Chappelle Show is that it will be on randomly sometimes on Comedy Central. And it's always, I mean, like I said, like I love every single episode, but like they are always playing the hits, either the Prince or the Rick James. So I'm always tuning in.
Gosh, good awesome. Stuff. But also and the X-Files too. That was a surprising pick. Triggered some things that I wasn't expecting to come up as viscerally as they did, I'll be honest. This is so much fun though. And I'm glad we waited to do this. Like we mentioned, we've had a couple of these conversations with other folks before we did ours. And I think I'm glad we did that because I think it gave us a bit more of an insight into how these lists are put together. Cause I know that mm-hmm. when we started this project and started doing these interviews, my list looked different than it does now. So I'm glad we were able to kind of sit with it and learn from some of our guests and talk about some of these shows. I mean, some of these shows on our list we've talked about. So if you like some of these shows, we won't tell you which, but there will be some upcoming guests that mentioned a few of these here and there. So stick around for those. But yeah, gosh, I loved every minute of this. And Brandy, I'm so excited to continue having these conversations with you and with our guests and to keep talking about people's favorite shows and crafting these crazy criterias. As frustrated as some people get with with some of the rules, I think it's super fun. And
look, the frustration leads to fun choices.
Frustration leads to innovation, baby. You know,
yeah. like you need to get frustrated to like get to the good shit.
Yeah,
is what I say. But yes, no, Dan, I love everything about this podcast. I'm so excited to talk to more people, discover more shows, add to my list, literally my list on Netflix.
Right, exactly.
That like after every time we talk to someone, I'm like, well, let me put this on there. Yeah. We're going to get to it.
And if you're listening, we want to talk to you as well. We want to hear from you. We want to hear what your top six shows are, what your criteria is. You know, we think this is a really fun way to just think about TV in general, to think about your own TV history, to think about shows that kind of made you the TV fan that you are, that kind of informed the shows that you watch. So we invite you to put together your own BFF criteria, send them to us. Brandy, where can they find us and where can they reach out?
You can email us at tvbffpodcast@gmail.com. And you can also check us out on Instagram. We are at tvbffpodcast. DM us.
Absolutely. You can also follow our personal accounts if you want. I'm at Deebs on TV, as you can imagine, constantly talking about TV, something we don't touch on as much in this show, but you know, current stuff, new shows, what I'm watching, thoughts on what you might want to check out, all that stuff. You can find that my Instagram at Deebs on TV. Brandy, what about you?
My Instagram is at Brandy Crawford. And if you like to see photos of really adorable children, then
the cutest.
My Instagram is for you because it's all pictures of my cute ass little kids. They do belong to me. I have a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old. They are mine. Okay.
They are yours and they're adorable. Yeah. And with that, I think that's a wrap, Brandy, on our first kind of second episode. But gosh, it was so much fun. I can't wait to do it again. And until next time, bye friends.
Bye friends.